and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Senate vote of 81-18 to reopen the government after a brief shutdown which led to an intense blame game that has pundits assessing who the winners and losers are. We'll begin with Paul Light, the Paulette Goddard Professor of Public Service at New York University, who was the founding director of the Governmental Studies Program at the Brookings Institution and is the author of Government by Investigation, Presidents, Congress, and the Search for Answers. He joins us to discuss the broader political landscape rather than the issues under contention that led to the shutdown, and that is how the showdown between uncompromising Republicans and frustrated Democrats was framed in the media and which side was more successful in spinning their narrative. With Trump claiming to act out of love for dreamers, he and the Republicans unleashed scurrilous racism and xenophobic charges against the Democrats, implying they only cared about illegal immigrants, not the American people. Then we'll look into the rejection of the compromise deal to reopen the government by leading progressive Democrats in the Senate, with Senator Kamala Harris fuming that it was foolhardy to believe Senator McConnell made any commitment whatsoever, and that she is disappointed with a conversation that suggests a false choice. You either fund the government or take care of the DACA kids. We can do both. Longtime political organizer and strategist Robert Creamer, a partner in Democracy Partners and author of Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win, joins us. Then finally, we will speak with Stephanie Taylor, co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, who has spent the last 15 years working on labor, electoral, and advocacy programs throughout the country. She represents the so-called Elizabeth Warren wing of the Democratic Party and joins us to voice her disappointment at what she sees as a cave-in by Senator Schumer and her concern that, quote, these weak Democrats hurt the party brand for everyone and make it harder to elect Democrats everywhere in 2018. And joining us now is Paul Light, who is the Paulette Goddard Professor of Public Service at New York University and the founding principal investigator of the Global Center for Public Service. Previously, he served as the founding director of the Center for Public Service and director of the Governmental Studies Program at the Brookings Institution, and is the author of Thickening Government and The Tide of Reform. And his latest book is Government by Investigation, Presidents, Congress, and the Search for Answers. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Light.
Delighted.
So, Paul, it's a wild day on Capitol Hill. The Senate voted twice, and that was an 81-18 vote in favor, with centrist and conservative Democrats joining with the Republicans and most of the 18 Democrats who voted against this ending the government shutdown are the progressives. And, of course, the vote in the House was 266 to 150. A lot of Democrats voting no. And we know also that it's going to the White House, of course, and it's expected to be signed this evening. So at this point, what do you think the Democrats got out of this shutdown?
Well, I think they got out of a jam. They took a tough position early on. The president and the Republicans took them to task. I think they got out of it as quickly as they could, got some limited political capital in some of the more liberal corners of the United States. But I think as the shutdown continued, Democrats were losing the framing battle over whether or not they had taken position that was particularly popular in the swing states, the swing districts. And I think, you know, in retrospect, it may have been a difficult position to sustain over a long period of time. And I think they got a pretty good deal out of it. I think that is a little bit of a stretch for them to make the argument that they won this debate because the issue of DACA, the Dreamers, not actually getting a guaranteed vote of any kind.
Well, that's what the progressives in the Senate are unhappy about. They don't know that they can trust McConnell, because it's basically a promise that since this funding bill goes now through February the 8th, it looks as if the reauthorization of CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, for 6 years perhaps that's on solid ground. There's also several healthcare taxes that they want to roll back. But in terms of DACA, it's a promise, not actually a deal.
That is absolutely correct. And there is no mechanism that gives the Senate any kind of authority to set the agenda of the House. And vice versa, you've seen how it works here. The Democrats did have an opportunity to compel the House and the Senate to act on DACA. It did not. The Democrats did not prevail. You can get a promise out of the House. You can get statements on the floor assuring that this deal will, you know, that the House will follow through. But there's nothing the Senate has except its ability to stop work to compel the House to do anything. So, you know, it's a promise, and it's worth the paper it was written on, and not much more. The question is whether the Democrats, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, before March 5th, will have an opportunity to hold up something that's very important to the House, and whether the House will yield on the Dreamers in order to get movement in the Senate. That's anybody's call, and it may yet fall to Donald Trump to make the push.
Well, Senator Kamala Harris, who voted no, said, "I believe it's been a false choice that has been presented between keeping the government open and resolving the DACA issue. I believe we can do both." So they really weren't mutually exclusive, but that's the way it was presented. And that's why I think a lot of the progressives are unhappy in the Senate.
Well, that's correct. But what did the Senate Democrats have in order to force the House to act on the Dreamers? The answer is the ability to say no. And that's a power that the president has through the veto and that the House has by rejecting what the Senate wants. So there's no compelling force here except public opinion. And the question there becomes, well, who can frame this out to do the most damage to the other party or the most good for our party? And in this particular case, the opinion polls over the weekend were starting to show what appeared to be a movement towards Republicans, that the Republicans and the White House in particular won the framing debate, that somehow this began to be pitched by Republicans and the president in particular as Democratic support for illegal immigrants and Republican support for all things good. And that's the big debate. If you don't win the framing debate, you can't get the House to yield, and you can't get the president to yield. And the president sat this one out for many reasons. I just don't think the Senate can compel. And in that regard, Senator Harris is quite right. A promise is a promise. It's worth the paper it's written on. But in politics, it's the frame, it's the movement in public opinion, and I think this one was starting to fade for Democrats, and they took the best option available. They saved some face on this. Whether they wanted to go to the extreme, which is to filibuster and obstruct in the Senate, which is perfectly reasonable, one senator can do that alone. I think the position was less and less sustainable, and Democrats had to take the best they can and see whether they can reframe this debate over the next 2 or 3 weeks.
And again, I'm speaking with Paul Light, who's the Paulette Goddard Professor of Public Service at New York University and the founding principal investigator of the Global Center for Public Service. Previously, he served as the founding director of the Center for Public Service and director of the Governmental Studies Program at the Brookings Institution, and is the author of Thickening Government and the Tides of Reform. And his latest book is Government by Investigation, Presidents, Congress, and the Search for Answers. Well, of course, the House also has the Hastert rule, which means that the entire Republican caucus has got to agree before anything comes up. And we know that the Tea Party has been obstreperous, or the so-called, now they call themselves the Freedom Caucus, and not very cooperative on anything to do with immigration. And we also learned that today at the White House, President Trump met with a group of hardline Republican senators on immigration, Tom Cotton and Sonny Perdue, et cetera. And then after that, he met with just two Democrats, both who voted today to end the government shutdown, Joe Manchin and the newly elected Democrat from Alabama. So,
and two senators who are in desperate need of conservative support. You're quite right to put your finger on that, yes.
Right. So to that extent, then, is this basically, you're mentioning that the Republicans were able to frame this, and particularly the White House, that the Democrats only care about illegal immigrants, they don't care about American people. So how are the Democrats going to recover in the sense that they did take a stand on DACA? They did, to my mind, they could have taken a stand on other issues, the least of which is how can we deal with the Republicans after they basically misrepresent what we did? I mean, after that meeting in the White House with Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin, basically the Republicans called Durbin a liar.
Yep.
And Lindsey Graham reinforced what Durbin had said, as did Jeff Flake. To my mind, there's two issues that they could have made a stand on. One is that the wall is a waste of money and the Mexicans are supposed to pay for it. So rather than look like you only care about so-called illegal immigrants and you don't care about border security, couldn't they have made a case that they've done everything possible to secure the border? There are more Border Patrol agents than the bureaucracy can absorb. There's more money being spent on that border than can be absorbed at this moment. And building a wall is a massive waste of money.
They could have made that point, and they can make that point in the future. They got boxed in the debate into a defense of the DACA program and an effort to advance the DACA program to deal with its March 5th termination date. They could have at some point said, look, we've won a big concession from the Republicans, which was the 6-year extension of the state child health insurance program. And then go after the Dreamers in the next round. You can't second guess what they did. They thought they had an advantage, and they may have misread the compromise on the CHIP program, the Health Insurance for Children program. They could have advanced a little bit on that. You know, this is a short-term debate, a short-term fight, and the Democrats need to muster their arguments and figure out a way to frame the Dreamers and rebut the president's position on the Dreamers and immigration so that they can advance in the future. And they're going to need to go back to the drawing board, back to their research to figure out how to make this issue stick when you have extreme positions coming out of the White House. As to your comment about the House of Representatives and the Freedom Caucus, those were the people who were going to the White House to subvert whatever agreement Senator Schumer and Senator Graham had achieved with Trump. Those were the people who were scuttling movement forward. So Democrats need to figure out a way to address the Freedom Caucus and the hard right conservatives on this issue. You could see over the weekend that things, that public opinion was starting to drift from the Democratic position. They need to reframe now, take a few days, a week or two to figure out a way to present this issue, accept the victory they achieved with the state child health insurance program, and go right back at it in a couple of weeks' time. They need to figure out what a sustainable frame, a sustainable position is on immigration, and get out there and sell it.
And again, I'm speaking with Paul Light, who's the Paulette Goddard Professor of Public Service at New York University and the founding principal investigator of the Global Center for Public Service. Previously, he served as the founding director of the Center for Public Service and director of the Governmental Studies Program at the Brookings Institution, and is the author of Thickening Government and the Tides of Reform. And his latest book is Government by Investigation, Presidents, Congress, and the Search for Answers. Well, it looks like they got conned to some extent, or at least they bought into the narrative that the Republicans also support DACA and that the president himself has talked about love and how much he cares for the Dreamers. At the same time, the president is saying that he wants to do something out of love. He and the Republicans are basically stoking xenophobia and racism by saying that all the Democrats are, this whole thing is about illegal immigration, not about the Dreamers. So they really, I think, again, they seem to have underestimated the cynicism of the Republicans and how they play hardball. And the ad that the Republicans put out was just vicious in condemning the Democrats and claiming they only cared about illegal immigrants. So I guess maybe they did take their gloves off. They did get tough, but the other side got even tougher.
Well, you know, I don't think that President Trump set this up to trap Senator Schumer. I don't think that President Trump is that much of a long-term thinker, let's put it that way. I would say that Democrats make a mistake when they assume that the president's word is good. The president's word has an expiration date that is in the nanosecond range. You leave the room, and the president's mind can change. So anytime a Democrat is negotiating with the president, and I might add that some moderate Republicans have come to this conclusion as well, the president is not a reliable negotiator. And there's plenty of history in his business career to suggest that he played fast and loose with contracts, he played fast and loose with agreements in his business and building his business empire. So you've got a basic problem if you're going to the White House and saying, okay, let's strike a deal with this president, because nothing the president commits to is written even in light print. He is just not a trustworthy negotiator. And you've got to move off that and figure out how you're going to push this forward. The president's word is no good. And that's what Democrats should have learned from this and probably knew in advance. Now they've learned an important lesson that they can deploy in the future when they go to the bargaining table.
Well, just in closing then, Paul Light, is there a likely impact here in November? Is this going to in any way diminish the expected blue wave of change?
I doubt it. I think that Democrats can frame this in the short run as an important step forward on CHIP. Many Americans care deeply about the child health insurance program. 9 to 10 million children are covered by that program. And so Democrats can take that forward and say, look, we extracted this. We're going to push forward on further efforts on the immigration debate, and we're going to frame it in a way that will be attractive to the public. You know, this is a short-term pushback for Democrats, but they want a significant compromise. It's a long journey from now until November, and Democrats may today have increased the odds of a blue wave by short-circuiting this, as you put it, vicious and cynical attack on immigration reform. This one needs to be settled for the short term, and Democrats can go back at it with a better message, a stronger message that resonates in more red states. And it's no secret that Doug Jones and Joe Manchin both are in deep trouble. Jones has time to set his course, but, you know, Trump was sending a signal to conservative Democrats, moderate Democrats, that he's going to go after them. And, you know, had two of them walk down to the White House and, take the president's call, and suddenly we're reminded that there are vulnerable Democrats next fall.
Well, Paul Light, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Very good conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. And again, I've been speaking with Paul Light, who is the Paulette Goddard Professor of Public Service at New York University and the founding principal investigator of the Global Center for Public Service. Previously, he served as the founding director of the Center for Public Service and director of the Governmental Studies Program at the Brookings Institution, and is the author of Thickening Government and The Tides of Reform. And his latest book is Government by Investigation, Presidents, Congress, and the Search for Answers. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into the rejection of the compromise deal to reopen the government by leading progressive Democrats in the Senate. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Robert Creamer, who is a longtime political organizer and strategist and the author of Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. He is a partner in Democracy Partners and is active in the resistance. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Creamer.
Good to be with you.
Well, thanks, Bob. And the Senate voted to end the shutdown on a 81-18 vote, with the progressive wing of the Democratic senators voting against it. Senator Kamala Harris of California, she basically said it was foolhardy to believe Mitch McConnell made any commitment whatsoever, and went on to say, "I'm disappointed with a conversation that suggests a false choice. You either fund the government or you take care of these DACA kids. We can do both." So, what's your reading on this? Did Schumer cave, which is certainly the way a lot of progressives feel, and what did the Democrats gain here?
Well, I don't think Schumer caved. I think there are a lot of progressives who feel that it would have been a better strategy at achieving the end to have hung tough right now and not have before this temporary, this current temporary funding bill. You know, Trump and the Republicans are in such chaos, they can't negotiate a spending bill. They keep lurching from temporary fix to temporary fix. We're a third in the fiscal year, no budget, and that puts everybody at risk, including, I mean, from the military and our kids to especially Dreamers. I mean, there's no way to run a country. But the fact is, I know a lot of people were disappointed that the Senate did not stand tough on this before the this last temporary spending fix. And, you know, it's time, I think, we've all got to tell the Senate and the House we can't kick the can down the road anymore, and that we expect everyone to make good on their promises to protect Dreamers and extend CHIP and everything else before the government funding runs out yet again on February 8th. I think we got to really concentrate our energy now, 3 weeks, on just putting these folks in the hot seat and making sure that nobody escapes here, not voting the way they need to do to take care of this problem.
Well, but that was the whole purpose of, or at least the frustration of shutting the government down in the first place, was that the Democrats could never get anybody to basically make any kind of commitment and keep doing these continuing resolutions. And of course, as Senator Schumer made clear, dealing with Trump is like trying to negotiate with Jell-O.
Jell-O.
So that's the question that I think arises, surely, Robert Creamer, is, if you're going to shut the government down in order to get their attention to stop jacking you around and basically making false promises and not delivering and kicking the can down the road, why would it be different on February the 8th?
Well, they claim they've got a commitment to actually do this in the near term. We're going to have to see. I mean, you know, we'll be back at the same place in 3 weeks. You know, with not enough votes to get this to continue the government, and you know, the right approach, of course, would be to try and assure that there is a omnibus spending bill by the 8th that really does plan for the entire spending for the balance of the fiscal year, and that this is part of that deal. Period. And you know, I think you know, at some point people are going to get fed up with this, we're coming really close this last time. I think people have got to just refocus. We can't get our eye off the ball. It's the Republican inability to—they control every house of both houses and the presidency. That's why the shutdown happened, and their antipathy toward immigrants of any sort. Guys like Stephen Miller, who keep pulling the president back from his commitments. Of course, like you say, it's like Jell-O. He has no sense of what he really stands for, except himself in these matters. And this will be ultimately decided by ordinary people out there going to town halls and pick up a phone calling their congressman. That's what we got to focus on now.
And again, I'm speaking with Robert Creamer, who's a longtime political organizer and strategist and the author of Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. He is a partner in Democracy Partners and is active in the resistance. So in terms of then the blame game, not the actual issues involved here, because they get lost in the politics.
Right.
Who won this? Because it seemed to me that the Republicans, and particularly Trump himself, played a very cynical hand. On the one hand, in these meetings with Lindsey Graham and Chuck Schumer and others, and we saw the exchange with Dianne Feinstein in that cabinet meeting or in the meeting in the cabinet room that was to prove that Trump wasn't completely gaga, where she talked about a clean DACA bill, and he immediately agreed with her, and then Kevin McCarthy weighed in and he changed his mind. But when in that meeting, he talked about how he loves the Dreamers and he wanted to do something out of love. So on the one hand, he says that. But on the other hand, when the Democrats go to the mat for the Dreamers, the Republicans frame it as to the American people that the Democrats only care about illegal immigrants. They kept hammering away at that illegal immigrants. They don't care about you, the American people. And that seems to have worked to some extent, has it not?
I don't know. I'd say it worked. I mean, I think you're absolutely right that that's what they did. I mean, you can't believe Donald Trump from one day to the next what he says. I mean, it's the one thing we do know is that his entire operation is caught up in. He won the presidency based upon his demonization of immigrants, of people of color, of other countries. I mean, it's remarkable the kind of division he constantly sows. But, you know, who won this is going to, we're not going to know right now. We're going to know who won this whole encounter after we ascertain whether or not we actually get the DREAM Act, the Dreamers taken care of, after we find out, whether we can actually stand up for what we believe in as a party. I got to say, I think in terms of politics, the people who are going to remember most what this whole thing ultimately yields is the base of the party, the Democratic Party, the base of the Democratic vote, and in particular Latinos. If we come out of this like I suspect, I hope we will. I think the Latino population, the growing Latino population in this country, will understand that the Republican Party has abandoned them entirely. Independents, not as much, based on past experience. In 2014, you know, the Republicans came out of that shutdown just looking horrible. But, of course, there were intervening events. In that case, it was the collapse of the Obamacare website that caused independents to move, change. I think there'll be so many intervening events between now and the election that for independents, this is not going to be as dispositive a moment. For the base of the party, it is. We have to stand up tall in the end. In the end of this game, we better win, or we can't look them straight in the face.
And, of course, the vote in the House was 266 to 150. A lot of Democrats voting no. And
including the Democratic leader and majority leader.
Right,
both.
Right.
I mean,
and we know also that it's going to the White House, of course, and it's expected to be signed this evening. But during the day, of course, Trump met with a delegation of hardline senators, Tom Cotton and Sonny Perdue, the ones that basically called Senator Dick Durbin a liar, even though he was telling the truth. And Lindsey Graham verified that, as did Jeff Flake. So he met with those guys. And then later he met with Joe Manchin and the newly elected Democrat, Doug Jones, down in Alabama. So what's the story then there with the centrist Democrats? Lindsey Graham's now talking about this new coalition of moderate Republicans, if indeed there are any of them left, and centrist Democrats. Do you see that as a path forward? And that would mean, of course, progressives are fuming on the sidelines.
Well, if on the immigration question, Lindsey Graham and some of the other Republicans can try and move things in the in a direction to come up with a settlement. That's not a terrible thing. If Luis Gutierrez, who's probably the most vocal advocate of immigration reform in the United States, and the most revered in the Latino community, I believe. He's looking to get something done. I think we all should be looking to get something done. This is not just a political calculation going on here. This is about 800,000 young people's lives, and we have to make sure that they are first and foremost when it comes to the resolution of this issue having to do with DACA and the Dreamers. The broader question of the Republican inability to govern and its priorities is, of course, another question, and that will ultimately, I think, be one of the major questions at litigation at this in this election. Being led by a guy who runs government like you drive a bumper car, with no long-term vision, no understanding of consequences, a dangerous person, in the view of a lot of psychiatrists, is not going to stand the Republicans in very good stead in this election.
And again, I'm speaking with Robert Creamer, who's a longtime political organizer and strategist and the author of Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. He is a partner in Democracy Partners and is active in the resistance. But why then did the Democrats, given how much Trump and the Republicans have racialized it and appeal to xenophobia and racism by suggesting that the Democrats only care about illegal immigrants, they don't care about you, the legal Americans. Mm-hmm. In other words, why not frame the argument, not so much counting on the idea that, that Trump says he cares about the Dreamers and the Republicans say they want to deal with the Dreamers. Well, they say that, but they haven't done anything. So that's not exactly something he can put in the bank. But what you can say, surely, Bob, is that what's being held hostage here is this damn wall, which the Mexicans are supposed to pay for. Can't you make an argument that DACA is not going to cost us anything? It's just going to remove this incredibly cancerous kind of doubt that's gnawing at these kids who don't know whether or not they're going to get deported. And just to do the humane thing and remove that cloud of insecurity, that's a no-brainer. But why make a deal, as Schumer even suggested, to pay for this damn wall or make some type of token payment to get Trump off the hook for making a stupid promise, one, to build a worthless wall, which is a massive waste of money, and two, the promise that the Mexicans are going to pay for it, which they clearly are not?
Well, all of what you say about the wall is, of course, totally true. What an insane thing and a complete waste of money. But I got to tell you, in the end, I do believe that making sure that those 800,000 young people are secure is more important than giving a little something up on the border security front, even if it's stupid. I mean, it's not Democrats that are advocating for this insane wall. It's not Democrats that are advocating for any of these other questions. I do think also that the wall is probably the least important of the things on the table. The other immigration-related questions, the so-called chain migration, that is to say family migration, you know, that change. The Republicans want to change the character of legal immigration. Instead of uniting families, instead of a country of underdogs who come here to struggle and succeed, they want to make this a country of overdogs, you know, of only the smartest people get in. Well, that would change the nature of the American story, fundamentally, its identity. And I think that's just wrong. We believe that families should be united and that some of the people who make the biggest contributions, Lord knows Donald Trump's, what was his grandfather, was a barber. And he ended up being president, Lord help us. I mean, I just, you know, that's the story of America, and that's what we ought to be fighting hard to preserve, it seems to me, as well as, of course, the lives of all these dreamers who've known no other country but the United States.
Well, but the reality is that they have changed the story, and they're changing it on the ground. We have more Border Patrol people than we can train. They've had to lower the standards now to let people in. Mm-hmm. The border is saturated with drones and Border Patrol. They're Absolutely. Getting more and more aggressive. They're going after immigration activists and deporting them. They're deporting people who've been here for decades. It has changed. Stephen Miller and General Kelly, who's a real yes. hardliner, and perhaps the worst chief of staff we've ever had. A lot of people falsely thought, oh, took some comfort, we got an adult in the room. Well, this guy is a real hardliner, and he's also, I think, either incompetent or incapable of being sufficiently competent to stop the raging incompetence of the guy he works for. The point I'm trying to make is that they've already changed him and Stephen Miller. They've changed America.
The only way to undo that is by, first off, electing a Democratic House and Senate so as to be able to put a check on that kind of activity, and secondly, to place somebody back in that Oval Office who believes in American values and not the kinds of white nationalist garbage that these guys are committed to. I mean, they are really committed to a different kind of America, and I completely agree that that's the only thing you're going to do to change it. We're not going to change them, and we certainly can't labor under the delusion that Donald Trump cares about, frankly, anybody but himself. Anybody.
Well,
maybe
just,
his kids.
Just in closing, though, in the last minute here, how's this going to affect the blue wave? Are you still confident that there's going to be a blue wave in 2018?
Well, I think let me just say there has not in my lifetime in working in progressive politics in 50 years been as large a progressive mobilization as there is in the United States. Again, we saw it again yesterday.
With the women, you mean?
With the women? Mm-hmm. But we've seen it all year. I feel very confident that if we do this right, that Donald Trump will ultimately be remembered as the pivot point for the most progressive period in modern American history. Now, in the near term between now and 2018 election, we certainly have the potential for a major wave. How this battle that we're just talking about comes out in the end, this is just an interim step, will impact that battle. And it is critical that for Democrats, for progressives, that we, A, stick together, keep our eye on the ball, but, B, that we stand up for Latinos, for immigrants, for the base of the party. That's who's going to remember whether we fought for them or not. So, in the end, that's got to be our story, and that's got to be the reality.
Well, Robert Kremer, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Good to talk to you, Ian.
Well, thank you, Bob. And again, I've been speaking with Robert Creamer, who's a longtime political organizer and strategist. He's the author of Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. He is a partner in Democracy Partners and is active in the resistance. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back speaking with a representative of the so-called Elizabeth Warren wing of the Democratic Party, who joins us to voice her disappointment in what she sees as a cave-in by Senator Schumer. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Stephanie Taylor, the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, who has spent the last 15 years working on labor, electoral, and advocacy campaigns throughout the country. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephanie Taylor.
Thank you so much.
And Stephanie, it's pretty clear from your quotes from CNN that you're disappointed in this deal, this compromise deal that was made to end the shutdown and reopen the government in the Senate. In brief, do you see it as a kind of cave-in on the part of Senator Schumer?
Well, it's absolutely disappointing. It's disappointing both because there's families that are in limbo and hurting, immigrant families that need resolution. So obviously, from a policy perspective, it's disappointing. But it's also extremely, in our view, bad political practice. You know, people are on the Democrat side. People in general, Republicans, Democrats, independents, don't want to be the kind of society and the kind of country where we deny poor kids health care or where we rip apart families, send immigrants back to countries that they may, not even remember, where they might not even speak the language. And so, we think that it's both bad policy and bad politics.
But when you say that today's cave-in by the Senate Democrats, led by weak-kneed right-of-center Democrats, is why people don't believe the Democratic Party stands for anything, these weak Democrats hurt the party brand for everyone to make it harder to elect Democrats everywhere in 2018. The Republicans, of course, are framing it in a very cynical way. While Donald Trump says that how much he loves the Dreamers, they put out the most scurrilous, racist, xenophobic attack ads suggesting that all the Democrats care about is illegal immigrants. So where do you see that the Democrats didn't go to the mat for the Dreamers and for the CHIP program?
Well, and you raise a very good point, and let's be clear, absolutely, at the end of the day, the main fault is with Republicans, right? And I think that that's a good reminder. You know, the Republicans are absolutely, at this point, the enemy of working families. But one thing that we're extremely frustrated by, and I think that this is where the Democrats really went wrong, is even before today, but 3 days ago, the Democrats have not had a consistent message. The message should have been the Republicans hold power, and they are using that power to hurt kids and tear families apart. And we are fighting them. And we're saying enough is enough, and we're going to stop them from hurting families. And just to have some kind of consistent message that framed what the Democrats were trying to do in a way that was really simple, that people got, that was really clear. But instead, the Democrats had an extremely muddy message. You know, you heard all kinds of different things. Some people were talking about you know, CHIP. Some people were talking about the DREAM Act. Some people were talking about military spending. And meanwhile, the Republicans were just very clear from day one, and as a result, and very consistent in their message, you know, that this is the Democratic shutdown. This is the Democratic shutdown. They said that over and over and over. And that was why the Democrats started to lose faith. That's why they started to they started to feel like they were losing, and it's because they were losing the messaging war. And what this points to is nationally, the Democratic Party and leadership has got to get better messaging going before 2018. You know, we've got to be really clear with voters, with each other, with, you know, about what is happening in these fights and in these battles, and to really be driving a message about how they are going to battle on behalf of working families against the Republican attacks.
And again, I'm speaking with Stephanie Taylor, who's the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. She has spent the last 15 years working on labor, electoral, and advocacy campaigns throughout the country. Well, the SHIP program, of course, was going to be reauthorized. They kept promising it, but they never did, and that has been reauthorized. Depending upon Mitch McConnell's promises, as Kamala Harris said, is foolhardy, in fact, whether or not he will actually deal with DACA as promised, and whether we'll be back at this on February the 8th again. But the one thing that happened in the negotiations, which certainly caught my attention, was that Chuck Schumer said when he was talking about on the Senate floor how frustrating it is dealing with President Trump, that he said that we even put the wall on the table. Well, to my mind, that would have, when you talk about how to frame an argument, that would have been the best argument to frame, surely, that why should we keep these kids, these DACA kids, in limbo with all that anxiety that they can be kicked out of the country and be sent back to a country that they don't even know? Why should we do that? And when it doesn't cost us anything in terms of the budget, and this was, after all, a budget argument, it doesn't cost us anything to do that. It's a humane thing to do. Whereas the wall will cost us a lot of money. It's a massive and obscene and stupid waste of money. And by the way, the Mexicans were supposed to pay for it.
Well, I like that framing a lot. I think that that would have also been, you know, a better message than what the Democratic Party had. But I do think one thing that you're bringing up is interesting. I listened to the two statements when Chuck Schumer came out today and then Mitch McConnell came out, you know, together to announce that the deal had been reached. Chuck Schumer's statement was all about process. You know, oh, we proposed this bipartisan compromise, and, you know, Trump came back, and then we had these negotiations. You know, it's process, 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 which is an extremely, when you're thinking about political messaging, that's just extremely weak to talk about process. No one cares about bipartisan compromise. People care about whether, you know, kids can see a doctor when they're not. And then Mitch McConnell came out and he said, the thing we learned from this is that shutting down the government over illegal immigration doesn't work, or I'm paraphrasing here. But he was still so strongly on message and going to the red meat of, you know, what his base supporters wanted to hear, in a way that was just sort of breathtaking. And, you know, I really think that you know, Schumer's office and leadership in general just really needs to be doing a deep soul searching right now in terms of how we are talking about these fights with Republicans and how we're talking about what the Democrats want and their vision for the world and for the kind of society we're going to have and the kind of government that we're going to have versus the Republican vision. There needs to be some kind of Democratic vision presented to voters in a really clear, systematic, and pithy way.
So, to some extent, though, Donald Trump has broken the mold in terms of political narrative. He was very successful in his campaigns, even though he said the most simplistic things on the campaign trail. He spoke as a regular person, at least that's the way his followers and people who voted for him felt, and they felt that he was refreshing and he was different. Of course, he's turned out to be not any different, in fact, even more conservative than in terms of his record, his governmental record. He's even more right wing than anybody we've ever had in the country, and he's clearly doing the bidding of his donors. To that extent, he's not different, if not worse than all other politicians. But on the rhetorical level, he has been very successful, I think, in breaking the mold. And Chuck Schumer is a classic politician. He speaks in that same kind of cute rhythm that politicians have with the occasional catchphrase. And it, frankly, to my mind, I find it irritating. And I think that it would be really helpful if there were a Democratic leader that could talk like a regular person, not like a politician. Is there anybody on the political landscape that you could point to?
Well, obviously we love Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Jeff Merkley, Keith Ellison. I think that there are, you know, some of these progressive Democrats that, as you put it so well, I think they are able to really connect and talk like a regular person. And it's funny that you use that phrase, because this is something that we have been calling on the Democratic Party for many years, but especially since the last election, saying how important it is to have candidates who understand what we call the lived economic reality of people's lives, meaning, you know, there's people in this country, millions of people who, what are they worrying about when they're sitting around their kitchen table late at night? They're looking at a stack of bills. They're worrying about how they're going to pay their mortgage. They're worrying about, you know, some, you know, combination of credit card debt or medical debt, student loan payments, where to find a better paying job. Is their kid going to get hooked on drugs in this raging opioid crisis? You know, probably some combination of those concerns and those worries. You know, kitchen table issues for you know, immigrant families could also include worry about, is my loved one going to be dragged away by you know, ICE? Is you know, or for some families, is my loved one going to be shot at a traffic stop? Right. That, you know, it's a whole, you know, host of issues. But we call them kitchen table issues because it's like, this is what American families are worried about at night around their kitchen table. And is there a politician who can actually speak to what that's like? Is there someone who shows that they get it? And there's some people who do. You know, like I said, Elizabeth Warren, Keith Ellison, Jeff Merkley, Bernie Sanders. I mean, these guys get it. We need more like them.
And again, I'm speaking with Stephanie Trett. And again, I'm speaking with Stephanie Taylor, who's the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. She has spent the last 15 years working on labor, electoral, and advocacy campaigns throughout the country. Well, but given that the Republicans framed this in such a cynical way by basically saying to the American people, the Democrats only care about illegal immigrants and not about you, the American people, and whether that was successful or not, I don't know. There's obviously a lot of analysis going on about the winners and losers amongst the punditry. But assuming that they were successful, and that's why so many of the centrist Democrats joined in with Chuck Schumer to end this, and we know that Joe Manchin and the newly elected Democrat from Alabama visited with Trump today in the White House. So if that's the case, does that mean then that what's really going on here is that America is simply a much more right-wing, xenophobic country than progressives want to believe it is?
No, I don't think so. I think what we have is a situation in which Congress is out of step with the American people. When you poll issue after issue, you know, Republicans, independents, Democrats agree. You know, we want, we agree even on things like Medicare for all and expanding Social Security, things that seem like so-called, you know, left-wing issues. 70%, including a majority of Republicans, agree with those issues. People want good jobs. People want to know that their kids can go to a doctor when they're sick. People want clean air. These are things that the majority wants. And unfortunately, you have, even in the Democratic Party, you know, corporate elements that are reflective of the corporate capture of our democracy. And that is not a manifestation of where the majority of people are. That is a manifestation of corporate money in our politics. And at the end of the day, what we just need to do is elect better and more progressive Democrats.
But how do you get the majority to vote for them? We have a president who was elected, obviously, he's 3 million short, but they've got all the branches of government. After all, it was the Republicans who shut the government down the last time, and it didn't hurt them in the 2014 elections. They won great majorities and control the House, the Senate, and the White House. So is this blue wave that the Democrats are talking about in 2018 going to happen?
Well, I will say one thing that's interesting about Trump, which is, you know, as many of us know, he says one thing and does another. But he did campaign against TPP. He did campaign against NAFTA. He campaigned on the promise of better jobs. Now, maybe he's not going to deliver, and you know that, and I know that, and a lot of people know that. But I actually sat in a focus group in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, a couple weeks back, and it was a group of Trump voters, and we were actually trying to figure out how we could build bridges with these Trump voters on economic issues. And one of them said, we said, how do you like Trump? And one of them said, well, I'm happy with him because he kept his promise on TPP. He got us out of TPP, which was a really significant moment. So I think that what you do see is a lot of Trump voters and Republican voters in general who are responding to an economic populist message from the Republicans. And it is an authoritarian populism and a nationalist populism. And, you know, it's not the vision that progressives might hold, but, you know, we have to recognize that and figure out how we can, you know, as Democrats and progressives, respond to that and offer an alternative vision, you know, a more democratic populist populism, a more fair populism, you know, that's actually speaking to the economic concerns that people have and recognizing that they're real and that people are in real economic pain and that we need to be offering real solutions to that.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Stephanie Taylor.
Well, thank you so much.
And again, I've been speaking with Stephanie Taylor, who's the co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, and she has spent the last 15 years working on labor, electoral, and advocacy campaigns throughout the country. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared by